Hello and welcome everyone to our INE office hours for the month of June 2017. It is the first day of the month. Welcome to a new month and welcome to the call. So these are the calls where whichever program you are in, whether it's the INE and programs like CMDS or IRSPT or NEPT, you can ask me questions and we'll get you answers. We can share cases, we can talk about labs, we can talk about anything that's going on, we can talk about content within the programs, protocols, whatever it is that's on your mind, I'm here to chat with you about and explore. So I came in and Eleanor had her hand up, so we'll start there. And I don't see any other questions that have been typed in. So you can either raise your hand, star two, and I'll open up your line, or you can type your questions into the Q&A in chat. So let's start with Eleanor. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Hello, happy June to you.
Thank you. It feels kind of weird that it's June already. It feels like it was just January.
I know. Time is really going by, and it's getting hot in Florida, so it's not my favorite time of year, but I'll survive.
Oh.
Yeah. I know you all look forward to the heat. But
I look forward to it, yes.
I know. It gets really hot for us. But I have a couple of little questions that people have been, my clients have been asking me, and I also have something that's going on with two of my clients that I wanted to discuss quickly and just get your feedback on, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay. So one question that I was asked, which was kind of unusual, but I'll run it by you, that someone was asking me that when they have a bowel movement, they can see a light beige mucus on their feces. And they're asking me, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. So what do you think it would mean if you had to guess?
If I had to guess, my guess is they're not digesting something properly. And I don't know why I think it's fat, but I'm not really sure.
Okay. Well, you want to distinguish between fat and mucus, and they could look similar, right?
Okay.
So when the stool itself is tan all throughout, that's often indicative of fat. But if it's a mucus coating on top, you know, like, yeah, you have to ask questions. Does it look stringy?
Yes,
does it look
said,
like it's not?
It is a coating.
Yeah.
It's a coating, and it's not all over it. It's just in certain spots.
In certain spots, yeah. So what it could be is it's indicative of there's some sort of immune response going on. Those are usually from antibodies, IgA antibodies, the mucous membrane is creating a mucus barrier. So it could be a reaction to food. It could be a food allergy reaction. Or it could be in response to there being some sort of bug, you know, bacterial overgrowth or parasite or candida or something like that. But it's usually a response, an immune response that's happening that would cause mucus.
And is this something that I should work with her on, or is it, should we see if it passes, or what do you think?
Well, I would see if it's temporary. I would see if it, you know, kind of track it, because if it comes and it goes, then you want to look at a food diary. And talk to her about the possibilities and that you want to track it down and see if it's something that was just a one-time thing. You know, sometimes people get a really big antigenic load or they may have a little bit of food poisoning and there's some overgrowth and then it passes through. Similar to the way we get snot in the nose and it comes and it goes. It could be similar there. But if it's chronic, then you want to look
I asked her if she ever experienced it before, and she said the last time she had her period, she said she experience something similar.
Okay, now that's something different, right? So there could be a flow issue, right? So that's another thing to consider. If it's during her period, maybe some of that mucus is she's not actually seeing it in the stool. It's coming from the flow passing on to the feces as they're coming out. So that's certainly a possibility. And that brought up another issue, which mucusy looking stuff on the stool could also be like if somebody's right at ovulation and they have that big, thick mucus plugs that are coming out from ovulation, that could mix and be over the feces and they just see it in the toilet bowl and they think it's all coming out together. So those are just possibilities to look at.
Okay, good. And kind of on the same tangent, I have another person who, and I think I know what this is, but I just want to run them by you. She's seeing a slick in the toilet, like a greasy, which I told her she's probably not digesting her fats well. So I wanted to try to get her on probiotics. Her doctor told her she should do digestive enzymes and recommended one. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, and the enzymes really seem to be protein digesting enzymes, whereas the fat is the bile, and I know there's like lipase or something that's an enzyme. But she didn't want her to go on probiotics because she doesn't want her to populate the probiotics until she has the digestive enzymes correct first. I mean,
I think that's kind of a silly approach personally. I think you could do the both at the same time. I think that the enzymes, you'd want to have a lipase in there. So if it's not a full spectrum digestive enzyme, it's just protease, that's more used for inflammation and for protein digestion. So I would be more prone to give her a more full spectrum that has lipase, amylase, and protease, or separate lipase, just lipase on its own.
Okay. And nothing else about, you know, the bile, an issue with the bile or anything like that because she's not digesting fats.
Well, certainly can be a sluggish gallbladder. So I would also do bitters, because bitters stimulate the entire tract. It could stimulate the bile production and the flow. If she has any liver stagnation, you know, the bile's not flowing, there are herbs called in the category of cholagogues that could be helpful. And you also have to look at what is she eating. Is she eating good quality fats? Is she overdoing the fats? Is she eating fats that are processed and hydrogenated and a lot of oils versus whole food fats? That can make a difference too.
Okay, yeah. I'll review that with her. Okay.
Yep, yeah. Diet diaries help a lot when people start to talk about what's happening in their poop. I always like to say, well, give me a 3-day diet diary and also track the symptom. Track how often are you seeing it, you know, track other things about it. What's the color of the stool? How big are they? What shape are they? Kind of look at the Bristol thing and categorize them, because, you know, people give you one little thing and they go, oh, by the way, yeah, I was doubled over in pain and cramping when I was passing that stool. Like, oh, that makes a big difference, right? Or I was bloated or had really horrible smelling gas that day. So lots of questions. I would go back into the question, the history taking module in NEPT, and just kind of look at the way some of the questions that you might have forgotten about asking, but always ask, you know, very, very detailed stuff and get a 3-day food diary so that they could track the food and whatever symptom it is they're sharing with you.
Okay. I will. Okay. Another client, you know, we've been monitoring her CRP, and actually I've been talking to her for some time. So back in 2015, it was 0.117. In 2016, it went from 1.57 to 0.341. And then just in April of this year, April 13th, it was 1.222. And her doctor ended up doing a cardio IQ test by Quest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the CRP came back, so this was from May 11th, as 8.8.
Okay, now, let's just make sure it's all the same test, because there's CRP and then there's CRPHS, highly sensitive.
Right.
And they have different ranges.
Yeah, one did say HS and the other one said high sensitive.
Okay, so they both said high sensitive. The HS is the same as high sensitive.
That's what I thought, yeah. They were both that, yeah.
And they're both that. Okay, that's the first thing to differentiate, because they do have different ranges. So the CRP can jump when a person's experiencing an acute inflammation or infection. I had an experience like that with my husband, of all people. His HS, his was always 0.2, 0.2, 0.2. It came back one time, it was 22. And we freaked out, right? He has a family history of cardiac disease, right? He had high cholesterol. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm looking at it and go, but why? His cholesterol came down. Why is this up? And I said, okay, it could be he was just getting over. He had like a cold and it went into his chest and he had a little bit of a bronchitis. And so he's just getting over it when he had had it taken. So we waited about 3 weeks and we sent him back in. It was back down to 0.2. So it can fluctuate based on exposures and based on infection and other causes of inflammation in the body, even an injury.
Okay. Could cause it to jump so quickly in such
a short
period of
time. Cause it to jump up. So anytime I see a CRPHS go up that quickly, I'm always going to ask lots of questions about what other kind of inflammatory things might be going on in their body, and then I'm going to redo it 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay. Okay. I'm glad that I spoke to you because I was just questioning the accuracy of the test so that it could something like that could happen. But it sounds like it could be, and it could be driven by what you said. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is I have two clients that I finally convinced to do the mental malic acid test, the MMA test, because I've been mm-hmm. working with them on B12, and they both have high homocysteine. And when I did the test, one of them actually, their MMA came out to be 95, which is within the low range, and the other one came out to be 84, which is actually low. So when I look at these two, the fact
and
that they both
blood MMA?
Yes, blood MMA, right. And and their homocysteine was 14.4 and 13.3. And from what I can see when I read about this, it seems to be that they have a folate problem more than a B12 problem.
That's what I would tend to think, too, because folate, homocysteine isn't sensitive to B12. It's folate. It can be B12. It can be B6, and it could be folate. So with the MMA, it's very specific to B12.
Yeah,
I've always done the urine, and I've usually done it with Norman Labs, just because I liked their way of doing it and whatnot. So that's where I've mostly done it is urine. So I'm not familiar with that range as much. So I think about it as if it's over three, then I'm thinking it's a problem. If it's getting close to three, it's getting to be a problem. But that's in the urine.
Oh yeah, no, and I was using Direct Labs because that's what I have access to.
Yep.
And one of the reasons why I did this was one of the clients, her blood B12 was over 2,000. So I was just wanted to check it another way to see what was going on.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to start them both on folate. Do I need to ratchet back on the B12? I mean, is there any danger? I can't seem to find any problem with having.
Yeah, because too much B12. Too much B12 in a folate deficiency does mask the symptoms. So they wouldn't have the anemia symptoms, or they wouldn't show, the high MCV. What was MCV by chance?
I have it. Hold on. It was, hold on. CV. I think it was normal. 92.2.
Yes, it's a little on the higher side.
Yeah.
But not as high as it would be if you had a.
But it's been high historically. It's been as high as 99, 97, 98, 99, 96.
Yeah.
So it's been historically
it's been
high.
It's probably coming down because of the B12. Because the B12 can mask the deficiency in terms of the blood, in terms of the anemia, so you won't see the macrocytic, and then you run the risk of them. It's more the other way around. Never mind. It's more the other way around. It's more if you mask it with folate, you can miss the B12 and end up with the neurologic. So I wouldn't be too concerned about it. You wouldn't have to worry about taking it down or anything. I would just get them up on the folate, make sure they're eating lots of green leafies.
Okay, good. The last two are kind of simple. I had something to do with the SpectraCell, and the oleic acid was low, which is omega 9, right? And what do you think? Should I supplement them or just try to get them to eat more olive oil and
get them to eat more olives?
Olives
and avocado.
Yeah, avocado was the other one. Okay.
Yeah.
And they also had phosphatidylserine low or borderline. Is that the one that you take at night?
Yeah, that would, phospholipids are super important for nerve health. It's super important for cardiovascular health. And in terms of phosphatidylserine, important for cortisol management. So if somebody is under a lot of stress, they're in a stage 1 phosphatidyl serine will help bring that down. So you wouldn't, you'd only take it at night if you're concerned about cortisol, but if they are in adrenal fatigue, you'd want to be careful supplementing with it. So I would look at, food sources. I would look at things like sunflower lecithin. So not just the concentrated PS, but the whole spectrum, phosphatidyl serine, choline, inositol, ethanolamine. That's what I would look at doing. If it's just borderline low, I certainly wouldn't, unless if they are in stage one adrenal fatigue and they have super high cortisol levels, then you can use it to balance that out as well.
Yeah, I don't think they are, although it's an older woman. Her stress is really just with being old, you know, and forgetting things and all that kind of stuff. And I believe it is borderline. Let me look at her test. It's just starting in the yellow. It's just at the top of the yellow. So you think it's better for me just to, instead of supplementing her, to just get her to
Yeah, get her to try do some sunflower lecithin and add a like teaspoon to her smoothies every day.
And what brand would you recommend for that?
I like Lekithos.
Oh, how do you spell that?
Lekithos.
Lekithos. Okay.
Yeah, and they have the liquid that's kind of syrupy, but they also easier to take. I think they have like the flakes.
Okay.
Just real easy to add to a smoothie, or with the liquidy one, I've used it to like thicken desserts, like making like a cacao avocado pudding with it, which can be really tasty for some folks. But she just, you know, if she does smoothies, she can just throw that in the smoothies. If she doesn't, okay, she could throw it on top of other stuff and mixes in pretty well.
Okay. And the last question is, I usually get people to do lemon water in the morning, but I have someone that wants to do apple cider vinegar, and I can't remember. Mm-hmm. How much apple cider vinegar do you put in a glass of water?
You know, some of it is going to be dependent on how much they tolerate the taste, but you can try a couple of tablespoons.
Ooh, a couple of tablespoons. Okay. And is that, if they've got digestive issues, that's good for, I know it's
Yeah, it can be very helpful for digestion. Yep, it can be very helpful.
And will it stimulate hydrochloric acid?
It can. You know, it's definitely can.
Okay. Yeah, because that's what I'm trying to do with this woman. So, and
celery juice, too. Celery juice.
Celery juice, yeah, and that's also good for blood pressure, right?
Yep.
That's good. Okay, because we need that for her, too. Okay, good. Thank you. That was
it. You're welcome. Great. I love that. You know, pop, 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 easy questions. Thank you.
I just like passing things by you so I know I'm going down the right track
you're going down the right track. And you're not coming to our retreat. You're right there in Florida. What's up with
that? No, I'm not. I do. I have something else going on. But I am coming in November, definitely.
Okay, good. Too bad. Yeah. We're right there, and you could just drive there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Okay. Good talking to you.
Thank you. Yeah, okay, same here. Thanks.
All right. So that was, and I'm going to see if Laura, I know you raised your hand because you could hear me, but I'll open up your line and see if you have anything before I move on. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Yeah,
hi.
I don't have any questions at the moment. I just was saying that I could hear you loud and clear.
Okay. I just thought you might, just because you often do. You always have good questions. Great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm just soaking in all the goodness today.
Good. Yay. Great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. So Q&As, let me see. I had one from Kong from Singapore. Thank you for help rendering open up my NEPT Module 7 completed, but discovered I can't access exam professor or any modules. Have there been a change to how we complete the module exam? Okay. Yes. So, Kong, yeah. So, everybody that's in NEPT, we are changing out. We're no longer using exam professor. And I don't know exactly what module they're up to, but they've been changing out all the exams, taking the questions and moving them into a new platform that's right on the website, making it much easier for everybody to manage and for us to tag you and keep track of what modules you're up to. So there should be, instead of going to exam professor, you will just find on the page, it'll say exam, and it'll take you to a page that has the exam directly. So anybody that's in there. He's saying module 7. I'm assuming, I'll look real quick, to see. I know that anything past 12 has the modules right there, but anything before 12, we were working. So let me just go to 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And on the question of whether it's truly self-paced, when it was originally set up, it was before we had the platform set up that could easily make it self-paced. So we were just releasing the modules on a monthly basis rather than when you completed them. And now we've got this platform set up, and as soon as we get exam professor fully moved over, then we're going to move over to a new campaign in the back end that'll make it truly self-paced, and everybody will be put in wherever they are right now, and then they can go forward from there. So I'm looking, and it says, yep, yeah, so on that, Module 7, which Kong was asking about, but also on most of them. So he clicks it, and I clicked it, and the exam is there. So if you hit exam, I'm looking, it looks like maybe they finished. Digestion, I know, was. Let's see, physical. Oh, I think we might be there. Exam. Hallelujah, yay. It's been a long process getting that done, but looks like, so chemistry, let's see how that is. I know blood sugars already has that. I know sleep already had that, and food principles doesn't have the exam up yet because we're finishing that up today. Our last call for that, food principles. So, yeah, awesome. I'm excited about that for you guys in NEPT, and then we'll move that foundations into just like the mastery, we're moving it into self-paced. So as soon as you finish one module and you do the test and then you click it, you finish the test, it triggers a tag to be set so that it opens up the next module for you. So you'll go through them at your own pace, one at a time, and it gives you incentive to finish a module instead of having everything opened. So yes, good questions from Kong. And Lynn, if you can make a note, there is a thing we can find it somewhere where we can open up module 8 for him. We can go ahead and do that for him. He's whipping through it. All right. So let's see. I don't see any more questions there. And on the chat, let's see. Janet, books looks like summer and travel time. I have a list that was given to me for suggested supplements for a 25-day trip out of the country. So the suggestions are Alisair emergency packs, 2 to 3 a day, Echinacea, Golden Seal. What's your experience? You know, I'm not crazy about those emergency packets. I just think it's not the best vitamin C in the world. It makes it easier to take on a trip to have them in packs, but you can also get liposomal C. And you can get those in packs. If you go to Live On Labs, you can get those vitamin C's that way. The emergencies tend to have extras, and I'm not sure if they're non-GMO and if they're from corn and all that. And some of them have flavors which have some fructose in them. So I kind of like the idea of liposomal C. Echinacea, Golden Seal, Acidophilus, encapsulated ginger. You certainly want to be careful. Probiotics are really important to take when you're traveling. Make sure that you get spore forms or forms that can tolerate not being refrigerated. I wouldn't say Acidophilus is just not it's not a full spectrum. And again, it should be the probiotics that are best suited for you. So some people do better with more bifidus, and some people have different variations on that. Encapsulated ginger powder. I've never carried ginger powder when I travel, but if you tend to get motion sick, that could be helpful. And the other thing that could be helpful for motion sickness is those acupressure bracelets, or make your own with little, like a bean, and tape it to your wrist, that kind of thing. I wish you were going to be at the retreat, Allison, too. I wish all of you were going to be there. Tony and Allison and Eleanor, you guys. Is this for business as well as clients? No, this is a call for just for the practitioners, Allie. This is definitely that. NAC could be helpful. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could take. What do I take when I travel? I always make sure I take echinacea. I usually don't take golden seal. I take Oregon grape. I know golden seal's endangered, so I don't use it very often. I will take probiotics. I'll take enzymes. Vitamin C. Always take vitamin C. I take this stuff that I get from a allergy research. It's a powder called Russian Choice Immune. And it's a particular kind of probiotic that doesn't need to be refrigerated, but it helps in as a first defense. I also take Gaia. What's it called? They used to call it virus something, and they changed it to first defense, I think. But it's basically a specific form of echinacea and a couple of other herbs that you take right at the first sign of a cold or flu. And I found that to be super effective as well. You can take garlic, although garlic is usually something you can buy. Yeah, good stuff. Aw, too bad, Tony. I wish you could be there. Going to Idaho to support your brother. Lovely. Aw. All right, let's see. I'm going to go back. Who has questions that's called in? Raise your hand. There's Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Actually, I raised my hand because I was going to let you know that all the tests were open. So, and then I have the form. So I think he said module 8, right?
Yeah, module 8. So if you can open him up for module 8, that's good.
Yep.
Good. Now that all the tests are open, Zara's going to go back in and redo and put the new campaign he did, which will allow for step by step. And he said he knows how to put people in where they belong. So I'm going to trust that he does because I have no clue.
Yep. Trust the process.
And then, the digestive testing module should be opened hopefully by the end of the week or the beginning of next week. I just had a meeting about that. And then we have all the other modules. We have dates to be releasing every couple of weeks after that. All the content is done. It's just a matter of the back end and getting people to put that stuff up. So we're excited by that.
Right. Yep. And we've been creating some assignments for people to do as well.
Yes, I love assignments because they help me to see, you know, that you're up to speed, and also gives you the opportunity to do some clinically relevant things for each
sections. These aren't kind of assignments where we're like, oh, let's see how can we trick them or something. It's more they're learning opportunities. So now you've learned this stuff. How are you applying it? And because that's what this is really about. It isn't, although we love to geek out, the real skin in the game is how are we applying this in our lives as well as our clients' lives. And so that's what the assignments are all about is how can we help you to see how this is going to be relevant as you help people. You know, and I'll just share something that maybe this will help people too. So in each of the modules, there's something called next steps. Mm-hmm. And because one question people often, you know, well, how do I use this course to increase my business? So if you have any type of a site or a blog or even Facebook, if you use those next steps as ways to share. So like they might be, one of the next steps is share what you have learned about the endocrine system. So write a blog post or a Facebook post or something. And the more you do these things that are in that next steps, people are going to see how much you know, and they're going to reach out to you just organically because you know things and you're applying them and they're seeing that and they'll want to work with you. So I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, showcasing your expertise is a great way to build your business. That's a great point. And all of these, well, the next steps and the assignments are all geared towards putting it into practice. So the next steps are typically, you know, find a family member, a friend, or one of your clients and do X, Y, Z, follow them here, do that there. Mm-hmm. And that way you're actually putting it into action. And the assignments are oftentimes things like, okay, create an elixir recipe to solve a particular problem, or create a two-page handout that would educate your clients about one of the nutrients or one of the food principles in this module. So it's really practical things. I think for sleep, it was some kind of tracking document. So it's stuff that you can actually use in practice. And we also are inviting you to share with others, and we can put them on the advanced topics part of the module so that everybody gets to share and use each other's stuff. The other thing, which what you just brought up, which I think is interesting, somebody wrote to me and said they were doing some sort of a summit for practitioners or help people to build their businesses, and would I contribute a tip? And they basically asked me this question. If I had to start all over again, no list, no following, I had to start all over again to build my online presence, what would I do? And I sat there thinking about it, and I said, you know, the thing I would do would be to get out there and showcase my expertise wherever I could. So number one, I would contact people who have popular blogs for health, and I would ask them to write an article, or I would write some really cool article and see if it's one they want, or ask them what they could use and could I write an article to guest do. I would also go to people who had podcasts, radio shows, YouTube channels, and talk to them about doing an interview with them, Facebook Live even. Just get people a really nice big followings and offer something that you think that would be good for their audience, not just something that's going to be like, you know, hey, I'm going to teach you about, you know, how to eat more lemons, but, you know, something that's really you think is complimentary for them that they wouldn't perceive as competitive. And I did that when I was first starting out. I contacted people who had big sites and I said, hey, can I do a free webinar with you for your people, or can I get on your podcast? And that's how, and then I had a free something that I would offer them based on what we talked about. Oh, you know what? Why don't you get, go here and you can get my free Elixir book. And then I would build my list that way. So I was thinking about that because I wanted to share it with you guys, because a lot of people ask me that, like, how do I do this? How did you build such a big list? And it's really just been little things like that, mostly through showcasing my expertise. I haven't done a lot of the typical things that the marketers teach you to do to build a list. I've done more of the things like, I have expertise. Somebody else needs this expertise. How do I get that known, and how do I get people to? And I would find every summit I could possibly be on and be on those summits and then offer a free gift to people. So just a couple of tips of what I would do if I had to start all over from scratch.
Well, I think if we come from that heart of service, if you just look all around you, there's opportunities for service, whether it's in your own community or in this virtual community, and just always have that, it'll happen.
Yep. You want to do service, and you want to have a way to have them follow up with you, because that's what a lot of people do. They go out there at service, but they don't have anything to give back. So they'll say, oh, go to my website. Like, there's no place on your website that you can
but that's
sign up.
But then you're not really doing it from service, right? Because if you're really doing it from that heart of service, then you know that having them be in your tribe is going to serve them. So because when you don't continue that call to action, you're retreating from yourself. You're not fully opening up your heart to them.
Yep.
Yeah, totally, because this is what I'm learning.
I know. I see it. I see you changing so much with that evolution, and I really admire that. I also wanted to mention that yesterday I did a Facebook Live interview with somebody who's become a dear friend, but I, you know, met him a few years ago, and he was referred to me to help me with my marketing. And at the time, it was like, it's too expensive. I can't afford the budget, blah, blah, blah. And I reached out to him, or he reached out to me again this year, and actually did hire him to help me with three different launches. And as a result, he also got really excited about the work that I'm doing. He started doing Sweet Spot. And he has gone down 42 pounds, and his doctor, he had a hunch to go off his thyroid medication, waited 3 months, got retested. Doctor said, you don't need it anymore. You know, so he's thrilled with the work we're doing. But I didn't know as much about him. I thought of him as this great marketer that also taught meditation as a side thing, right? That's what he liked to do. So I interviewed him, you know, because I know he understands our people because he comes from being a massage therapist and hip meditation teacher and then all the marketing stuff. So I thought he could teach some great marketing strategies from that perspective. And interestingly enough, so much of the call was really about some of those blocks that we all have to our success. And it was a really great call. I thought Lynn was on it too, and I think she enjoyed it as well. I got the impression. But it was, wanted it to, you to check it out. Just go back to the Facebook page and check it out and play it, because it's really about, you know, a lot of us get in our own way and we might put things out there and say, oh, that doesn't work. But it really isn't that it doesn't work. It's that you haven't done the inner work of really seeing your value and being comfortable charging people for it, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to do more of it in the world and you're going to be able to reach more people. So it was really a whole talk about the concept is not how do I make more money, how do I grow my list, but how do I serve more people? When you come from that place of how do I serve more people? Well, that's how this Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology was born. How do I serve more people? Well, I can't serve as many people as I'd like to serve by myself. Why don't I train other people in my, you know, 25 years of experience of doing this and teach other people it so they can go out and serve more people? So you guys are how I can serve more people, right? There's 100 and, well, no, between the three, between NEPT, IRSPT, and CMDS is probably over 300 of you guys out there, maybe even closer to four, who are going out there and reaching other people. So even if each of you were only to reach like 10 people a year, I've just exponentially increased the reach. So I can reach 3,700 people as opposed to whatever I'd reach on my own. And then the other way you reach more people is you do blog posts and you get out there and you talk in your community. And I know it's scary at first to go out and talk in your community and be exposed and do I know enough and can I answer all their questions? But take it from me and everybody else who's done it, you may be uncomfortable the first couple of times, but then it gets really fun. And you know that if you don't know an answer, you look it up. So the more you do that and get out there, the more lives you're going to touch. And you're not going to just touch and help the people who pay you to do coaching with you. You're going to reach so many more. We have close to 100,000 on our, it might have even gone over 100,000 by now, that have signed up for our mailing list. Now, yes, some of them have unsubscribed. Some of them, their emails went defunct. So we don't actually reach 100,000 people every time we mail. But we've collected over 100,000 people over the course of the last, you know, probably over the last 5 years, six years, whatever, 7 years. And that means that every time I write an email that talks about something related to their diet or supplementation or their exercise or their attitude, every time I put it out there, that hundreds, tens and tens of thousands of people, 100,000 people are being reached. They're not all going to work with me. I could not work with 100,000 people, but they are going to have their lives changed. And don't underestimate the power of enrollment conversations, whether the person signs up with you or not. One of the letters I got once was about a year after I talked to this person. I'd done an enrollment conversation. Nothing happened afterwards. She didn't sign up for anything. She wrote to me about a year later and thanked me for changing her life and told me all of the things she had done in her life based on the conversation we had on that enrollment conversation. She didn't need to sign up with me. I had that happen to somebody I spoke to in a live event at somebody's chiropractic studio in New Jersey, and his friend was trying to get him to change his diet, trying to get him. He was scared because the guy had cardiovascular disease and hypertension, and I talked to the guy briefly. I did this talk, and that was it. You know, meet these people, nothing. He didn't sign up for anything. I get an email a year later from him. He had been following on Facebook. He had been getting my newsletters, and he was putting everything in place. He'd lost 60 pounds. He was off all his medication, and he had a new life, and he thanked me. He didn't have to do much of anything, right? So you're having a huge impact, even just the people you meet at the grocery store. And the last story before I answer some questions, because we have three more hands that just went up, is that there was a person that I met. Many of you have heard this story before, but I met when I was struggling with my own health and I was sitting at a gas station, getting my tires changed, reading a health book, and just some blessed angel stranger came up to me and chatted with me and gave me a recommendation about reading a certain book and going to check out a certain retreat center, a fasting retreat center, actually. And I followed up. And as a result, that man speaking to me, he's reached 100,000 people. He's changed 100,000 lives, plus all the lives of you guys who are changing all these other lives. That one man is responsible for all of this. So don't ever underestimate the power that you have to change somebody's life. It's really amazing. And just the fact that you speak to people, whether or not you ever set up a practice and get paid for it, just the fact that you get out and speak, you are changing lives, which changes the world. So I thank you for that. Anything more, Lynn?
Nope. This is great. It's helpful for me because this is really practical information.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's great for me.
Thank you. All right. So we have Eleanor, Laura, Isabel, and Carolyn. Carolyn, how did Carolyn get on this call? She must have come on a little early. That's okay, Carolyn. You're a practitioner. You're not in one of our practitioner trainings, but that's good. That's fine. The other call starts a little bit later. Eleanor, go for it.
You know, after you gave me the hint on what the jump in the CRP is, I'm sitting here thinking, well, so what do I do to find out what acute inflammation or infection is going on? What do you recommend for that?
Well, first of all, if it's acute, it might be gone by now.
Okay.
It could have been a cold. It could have been food poisoning. It could have been a viral infection. It could have been a bacterial infection. So if it's been however long it's been since she had that test taken, you can ask her questions. You can quiz her, and then you go back and test it again three to 4 weeks later. And if it's still high, then you're not looking at an acute situation. You're looking at something that needs to be addressed.
Okay. And if you think it's in the gut, what do you think is the best test to just find out what's going on in the gut?
If I think it's the gut, I would go for something like the doctor's data 24-hour comprehensive stool test.
Okay.
With the parasitology. Although if the basophils are low, so you want to look at the CBC. Look at all the parameters in there. Has her white blood count changed? Has it gone up or down? Has her lymphocyte to neutrophil ratio changed? Right? Have her basophils or eosinophils go up? If you look and you see, or her monocytes. Monocytes are often an indication that
that's the one that went, the monocytes went up and the RDR is up. RDW, I'm sorry, RDW, RDR. Do better.
Okay, so the monocytes indicate either a healing chronic thing or an acute thing and she's in the recovery stages. So monocytes, that's another clue. If your CRP goes up and the monocytes are up and the monocytes hadn't been up before, then I'm going to guess that there's some sort of an acute infection that they're in the throes of or healing from. So you want to look at what that might have been, but go back and test it again. If it's been 3-4 weeks or more, then I'd go back and test it again. Now, monocytes can also be elevated if the person's got a chronic infection that they're dealing with or an autoimmune disease. When the immune system is constantly working, the monocytes will stay elevated, and that you can tell by how long it's there. Sorry, I got distracted by that.
When you say the monocytes, eight, it was 8 last year, it was 9 in April, and it's 9.9 now.
Not much of a raise, but 8 is still high, though. 8 is higher. You know, we want to see them 5 or below, right, or 6 or below. I can't remember the exact number. So her monocytes have been high for a while, so I'm suspicious that there's a chronic infection or an autoimmune condition going on.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to think of what part of the body do I figure out the chronic infection is in. And the only thing I can think of is the gut. I mean, that's
well, the other thing, look at the ratio between lymphocytes and neutrophils. If our neutrophils are high, lymphocytes low, then it's more likely a bacterial. If the lymphocytes are high, it's more likely a viral. If they're both kind of in the normal range, but the total white blood cell count is either high or low, it could indicate that you have both. I looked at somebody the other day, and it was like, I think they have both concurrent, a viral and a bacterial.
Yeah,
so I'd look at all of those.
Her lymphocytes are normal, and her neutrophils or whatever are normal.
Neutrophils.
Too.
Okay,
yeah,
and they're like within
the
ideal range, right? Not just the lab range.
No, they're all green. Okay. It's just her monocytes, her RDW, and her MCV. And her hemoglobin, those are the ones that are not in green. They're in white, but not in green.
Hemoglobin gone down since last year, the last time you took it?
No, it's gone up, actually. It was 12.8 in April, and now it's 13.4.
Okay. And the MCV has gone up or down since the last time?
It's gone up. So they both went up.
Yeah, so the hemoglobin going up is a good thing, less anemia. MCV going up is not a good thing. It's indicating that the size of the blood cells is getting bigger. So that's what we identified before with the folate.
Yeah.
And you said the homocysteine's high. So I would put her on, you know, and since the B12 doesn't seem to be an issue, you might put her on something that has a folate and B6. For homocysteine support.
Okay. Yeah, she did a SpectraCell, and she's got B1 deficiency, not B6. That one was good, but you think she still needs B6 because she's had that.
Well, she might not if the SpectraCell showed okay. So folate might be. What does SpectraCell show on folate?
Borderline.
Yeah, so it's probably the folate.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't hurt to take a little extra B6. It depends on what other symptoms she has. If she has any menstrual stuff or neurotransmitter imbalances, the extra B6 could be helpful.
Okay.
Depends on the genetics, too. So the amount might be what SpectraCell says is a good amount, but that amount might not be the ideal for that person based on their situation and based on their genetics.
Okay.
Because it's not a functional...
I'm sorry, what did you say?
It's not a functional test, what SpectraCell does. It's really looking at, it's not looking at a particular function that B6 does or B12 does. It's looking within the white blood cells for how much of it's stored there. And, you know, whenever you're looking at quantifying the amount of something, it's not necessarily ideal, even if it says it's ideal, right? Because based on a person's genetics or other circumstances, they may need more than they need, right, than other people need.
Yeah,
so it could show up normal on SpectraCell, but it may show up abnormal on something like Great Plains oat test, right, which tests for functional. Right, so similar to how we could look at somebody's B12 and we look at their serum B12 and it could look perfectly normal, but their MMA and their homocysteine are high, we know that functionally that amount is not adequate for them.
Okay, got it.
And that's always what we're thinking. Function, always think function when you're looking at people's labs.
Okay? Yes. And just a quick question. If you have someone who gets constipated before their cycle and then they have their anus burns after that, is it because the constipation has irritated their anus and that's why it burns?
It could. I mean,
it could
be the buildup of toxins that are there. If it only happens then, you know, I would look at beefing them up with water like a week before their period, but also magnesium. It could be low magnesium.
Yeah, they do have low magnesium,
yeah. And magnesium needs to go way up the week before because magnesium and B6 are needed to latch on to the used-up estrogens and carry them out of the system. And when I do mineral testing on people, I always make sure if it's a woman that she tests normally and then the week before, and we usually have her on totally different doses that week before her period.
Okay, good. That's because I did test her because she had the constipation problem and she had really low magnesium, so I started her on magnesium. So she needs the week before more water, more more magnesium.
Yeah, and more movement. Just get moving. Increase the peristalsis by movement.
Okay. Okay, great.
Okay?
Yes. Thank you. Good. Thank
you're
you
welcome.
Very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
All right. So, Laura, now you have a question, Laura. There you go.
Yes. Sorry, as you were talking earlier, I thought, oh, this is really good because I felt so compelled by what you were saying about really coming from a place of service and serving the other person and their needs. And I think that's kind of my personality type too. I'm a little bit of like a mothering kind of nurturing personality, but I'm also finding that lately, of course, as I'm reading an energetic boundaries book, everything's kind of coming out of the woodwork. It's like the universe says, okay, we're going to test you on this now. And see if you're implementing what you're learning. And just so many times where people will like private message me and they just like want me to give them medical advice over their situation. I have no idea who they are. I don't know their background. And I actually feel like it's not serving them. It's actually kind of dangerous for me to just like give, you know, a random recommendation here and there without having all of the information. And I don't feel like it's a professional thing for me to do.
It's actually dangerous.
And I was just going to ask.
It costs you your license. You know, because you have a professional license and it's not a good thing to do.
It's not good.
No.
So I've just been noticing that this is a very interesting area for me because one, there are people that like physically deplete me. But I'm also just kind of getting in tune with, I was supposed to write down for a week anytime that I felt like my boundaries were violated and it like came up a lot. My whole journal is getting full. So I didn't know if you had, and these are all like not in my personal relationships, but, like people seeking out advice for like health coaching or their medical concerns or like.
Are they people you know?
And when
or are they people you just, they just randomly find you on Facebook? Okay. So here's the thing.
Yes.
You need a link that sends people to your consultation. You do a consultation, right? Paid consultation, it could be a low price entry point consultation, or something that sends them to a free gift that you have on your site that talks about some of that stuff. Either one. Hey, that's a great question. And you can have a canned response, so you don't have to do it. You just press the button and put the canned response in. Hey, great question. For lots of, you know, reasons, I cannot answer medical questions in a forum like Facebook. I need a lot more background and information to really be able to answer your question adequately. And if you'd like to set up a consultation with me, here's the link to do so. You send them to the payment, and then that automatically gets them to the calendar, and then they're done. And most of them go away because most of them are just looking for free handouts and want the world to take care of them. And you have set that boundary.
That's exactly what happens. Because when I say like, oh, you know, we could schedule a health coaching session. Here's a link to my website. Here's my fees. Like, yeah, they go away.
Right. So that's all
they
you
don't
do.
Want to pay for that.
Yeah. And explain it.
Okay.
You know,
I love that. I love
it
having
from that
like...
standpoint and just have it be an automatic canned response that you just send. And then when you have an assistant, your assistant will send them and you won't get to see them anymore. I used to get them all the time. They would come to my direct email. And now I don't even see that email anymore. Unless it's something like, hey, you should read this. Somebody said something really nice. Because I can't, you know, because my heart goes out. Oh, I want to help their aunt in Indiana. I want to help their sister in Minnesota. And you can't. And you could literally spend your entire day answering questions from people looking for free advice, and you can't do it. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to you. So, I have a blog post on that. I have a little ebook that I put together. Oh, you might benefit from these recipes that'll help you figure that out. Get them in your list. Get them on free stuff, and then you can market to them when you do your classes and all. Or get them to a consult, whichever feels like the best approach.
That's really helpful. I love having an automatic response Mm-hmm. It's like ready to go out.
That's ready to go. You don't have to spend your time on it. Oh, that's mm-hmm. another one of those. Click. Yep.
Yeah. Thank
Good job.
You.
Oh, yeah. Anytime. Boundaries are tough. They're tough for us in particular. They're tough for a lot of people, but they're tough for us in this profession because we're here because we want to help people.
Yeah.
Right? We're not here because we heard about health coaching or, you know, functional medicine practitioner as a career, the guidance counselor at high school as a career that makes a lot of money and is a great, you know, rewarding career. We're here because most of us either had an experience ourselves or a family member or a close friend who we've seen, you know, get messed up in the system and we've seen get helped, whether it was through our research, their research or whatever, and we're inspired and we want to do it ourselves. Correct? I mean, that's what mostly happens.
Correct.
Because we want to help people. We want to save the world. We want to change the world. And you serve them best by giving them information, right? And for the most part, a lot of the stuff that people need is not one-on-one from us. It's more of an educational thing. And what I found was when I was doing my private practice face-to-face, I would spend the time saying the same things over and over again, teaching them about fatty acids and the balancing of omega-3s and 6s and teaching them about the different things that did inflammation, teaching them about gut bacteria. And it would be like I'm saying the same thing to these people. And that's when I said I need this to be educational. I need this to be on the website. And that's why now, you know, we have thousands and thousands of web pages with all that information on it. And they either get the free stuff, there's plenty of free stuff, or they pay to get the more in-depth stuff. And with the in-depth stuff, anytime we do programs, we always offer them support along with it. We don't just give them information, you know, except if it's a $47 ebook. But if it's a program, we give them access to the Facebook group, to each other. We give them access to me on calls. And so you can do that and reach more people. And then the one-on-ones are those really tough cases that you really need to work on one-on-one. And I mean tough in terms of either emotionally tough, they have a hard time handling it, they're, you know, have addictions and it's hard to let go of their addictions to food regardless of what it does to their health, or those people who really have like tried a lot of stuff and you're digging in and now you're going into, you know, Lyme protocols and MTHFR and blah, 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 right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that's been a really helpful tool too, is I found that now capturing all of my intellectual property, capturing all of that content in video form or somewhere and having that library to like refer is really helpful. Right. Like, oh, I did a class on that, or oh, I did a video on that. Yeah.
And here's the thing, I'm just going to throw out there, just to get your marketing message out there more, whenever you can, and you've got stuff like that that you're offering free, do it in a way that's going to bring you traffic. So if you're offering something free, put it on YouTube, right? Or put it behind an opt-in, or do both, you know, send them to a YouTube video that then sends them back to your site for more information. But think about that when you're giving things away for free. Where is it located? If you're just sending somebody to a page on your website with stuff and there's no opt-in, put it on YouTube. Send it to YouTube. So then you get the drive-by traffic as well. And also always have a link back to your site from there. And always have a lead capture on your site. Some way that you're going to get them. Not sign up for my newsletter. Nobody wants your newsletter. Believe me, nobody wants your newsletter. Mm-hmm. Sign up for these three free recipes on how to slim your belly and energize your life, or how to get rid of pain, or three recipes that will support you in your Lyme protocol, or whatever, you know, wherever, whoever you want to attract, whatever the group is you want to attract, you offer that for free on your, all your pages on your website. And then you put your free content that you're doing, that if it is, you do want it to be open to the public, put it on YouTube. And then write a Facebook post on it and send people to watch it. I mean, there's just so many ways that you can get people back to you and reach more people.
That's a really great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. So, Isabel. Hi, Isabel.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, so this call has been very helpful, and thank you for the encouragement and all the advice that you've been given so far. So
you're welcome.
So I'm like constantly like with everything's been really helpful. And so the question I have today is I have this one client who's actually a very close friend too, who did a gut program with me. Now he's helping him with the going through the sweet spot.
Huh?
To his blood sugar level is a bit high in the morning, but he actually keeps it under 110 throughout the day. And his biggest goal is to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And the twice that he's been with me for about 6 weeks, you know, he's going through his program, he has some weight loss, like maybe 5 to 6 pounds, but it's not as he didn't lose as much weight as I thought he would.
Mm-hmm.
And for this time too, with going through the blood sugar balance program, I think he lost a few pounds. His clothing are fitting a little looser, but in general I was expecting a little bit more. You know, the way that he's been following the program. So I was wondering, you know, where else I should be looking at.
Okay. So I'm assuming you're meaning when you say following that he's sleeping, getting his
yeah,
8 hours
sleeping.
A night, getting to bed before
yeah,
midnight,
sleeping.
Doing heart mass yeah. or some sort of meditation or something.
Yeah, he's doing that. Mm-hmm. He's doing
okay.
that. Although he did, like, 3 months prior, he does have some heart palpitation at night.
Mm-hmm.
So he's waking up at night, his heart's racing at night.
Oh.
That had happened before, like 6 months prior. It was maybe more of a stressful event at work. He's thinking
yeah.
that's related to that. And it was gone for a while. Now it's kind of coming back in a less intensity. But however, he's still kind of feeling that.
Okay, and is it every night or is it certain nights? Have you been able to pin it down to specific?
Not every night. Yeah, not every night. So I've asked him to kind of, you know, did you have a stressful event at work?
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so he couldn't really pinpoint, associate that with anything.
With anything, okay.
Yeah.
And what about food-wise, right? If he's eating foods that are allergens, they can affect his heart rate. They can affect his blood sugar. So I'm assuming you've got him off of gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, the top allergens.
Yes, he's off all that, although he's still drinking a little bit. That's one thing that he is still needs to work on.
Drinking alcohol, you mean?
Yes, alcohol.
How much?
Maybe a glass of wine 2 to 3 times a week.
Okay. Yeah. So I would look to see if it's related to days he does that or days he doesn't do that, right? So maybe the wine keeps it down. Maybe the wine instigates it. Either way, you want to find out.
Okay.
But there could be some other sensitivities. Does he have any other particular symptoms in his body? Does he have joint pain or gut stuff or anything like that?
No, no gut stuff, no joint pain. He snores, just snoring. He noticed that when he loses some weight, then the snoring is gone. So,
mm-hmm.
and
how much energy does he have?
He has about, I would say about 30 pounds, 30 to 40 pounds.
Okay.
All belly fat, yeah, mostly belly fat.
It's all belly fat. Have you looked at his adrenals?
No, I haven't, because his energy level is good. And so
he might be a stage
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so we haven't.
Yeah, but if he's a stage one, he's going to be shooting out a lot of cortisol, which is going to raise his blood sugar, which is going to keep his belly from going down.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember the last time he had lost a bunch of weight was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. He was on Metafed and for about 6 months, and he lost like 20, 30 pounds and then gained it all back. Course.
Yeah. Is he exercising?
Yeah, he is. He's exercising at least 3 times a week. And he does heavy like weightlifting.
You might want to check his hemoglobin A1C just to see, because a lot of times, you know, when people have their blood sugar, that it doesn't go above 110, and everything's looking good, and then you do their hemoglobin A1C, and it's up to, you know, 5.6, and you go, huh, there are times that he's got elevated blood sugar, and it may be related to stress. But he's not testing because he's not eating. You know what I mean? May not even catching it. And sometimes they're just up and down and up and down because of the stressful situations. So I would look at his hemoglobin A1C and then looking at micronutrients. Have you done a blood panel on him?
No, we haven't done. Well, he did his regular, checkup exam, and I did notice that his liver enzymes are red high. I think they were in the 30s.
Okay. How about GGT? One of the liver enzymes. GGT.
I don't have it with me. Is that there are two liver enzymes, right? I remember both of them were high.
Well, there's ALT and ALT. Alanine aminotransferase and aspartate aminotransferase. But then there's GGT, which is glutamyl glutamic. I can't remember the exact what it stands for. But
okay, I don't. I'll have to look.
Alcohol. So when you say that, and he's still drinking a few times a week, the liver maybe stress. If there's some issues with it, right? And it could be feeding yeast, even if he doesn't have gut issues. He could be having some dysbiosis, and his microbiome is out of balance, such that he's favoring the more of the Firmicutes than the bacteria, right? So there's things like that would be important to look at. So whenever, you know, people appear to be on the surface doing all the right stuff, then you want to go deeper. But you're saying that the liver enzymes being out of whack, that's indicating that he's having some stress on his liver.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're going to we're basically doing the 30-day metabolic reset. So I'm going to ask him to not drink for 30 days.
Good.
And then follow, strictly the program and see how he does.
Yep, okay. That sounds good. And check his blood pressure. Have him check his blood pressure because that indicates some, and sometimes what happens is people have really good blood pressure and then they get stressed and they have higher blood pressure. And I've just been talking to my husband about this particular thing. And his hemoglobin A1C doesn't seem to go down in his belly fat because, well, he cheats. So that's part of it. But part of it is that stress response. So when he sits and meditates and then he takes his blood pressure, everything's good. But when he's up and running around, his blood pressure is going up, which indicates that his cortisol is probably going up to do that, to cause that. Yeah,
okay.
I'm suspicious of cortisol levels. You know, he might be in a stage one, and that's
stage one.
Right. Yep.
So if we do the 30-day, if he drops like just 5 pounds, or if he doesn't drop much weight, then you would suggest I look at the adrenal.
Yeah, I would look at the adrenals, but look at the hemoglobin A1C as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. And then there may be particular foods that he's sensitive to that cause an inflammatory response when he eats them and doesn't, that he's off of all the major ones, but there may be some others.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, even with the food sensitivity tests, I've done a few in the past, and they're not always accurate.
Not accurate. I hate them.
Yeah.
I don't use them anymore.
I have one person's like, I know I'm sensitive to a bunch of things, but this test show up nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That has shown up for me. I have somebody who's like so allergic to soy that if even breathes soy flour and his throat closes up and he gets gut stuff, yet it showed up he didn't have a sensitivity to soy. And that's when I quit doing them.
Yeah, so, and there's other times when, it came up a few things, and I have clients that take a few things out, and they felt great, so it just kind of hit.
Yep, there are times, right? They're hit or miss, right?
Yeah, okay. I'll just have him do a more detailed food journal, and then, kind of be more aware of what he's feeling.
And sometimes they're just eating too much. Right, they're not eating high glycemic foods, but they're eating big handfuls of nuts.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, well, that's calorie-wise, right? There's still the calorie in, calorie out equation. It's just not the only thing at play.
Okay. Mostly at night. His biggest meal is at night, right? He works, and he's doing, like, 16-hour fasting, which he says it works pretty good for him. And then he has his lunch, like, probably smoothie and some vegetables or chips, and then at night, that's when he has his biggest meal.
Mm. Yeah, well, maybe switch that around and have that biggest meal in the middle of the day. That can help.
Okay.
Yep. The body's much more able to handle it between 12 and 2.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
Great. Anything else?
Okay. No, that's it. Yeah, just a quick one, actually. So, if someone is feeling a lot of busyness, like lightheaded throughout the day.
Throughout the whole day?
Throughout the whole day, yeah. Usually, this is a new client of mine, and we started working about a month ago, and it's better. He's doing better, but I think that was the main complaint that around, it used to be like real early in the morning, and now it's, he's keeping a food journal, and so it seems like before meal. I noticed, like right before lunch or right before dinner.
Okay, I would do two measures.
Fogginess.
One would be blood sugar and one would be blood pressure.
Blood pressure. Okay, I'll have him do that. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, okay.
And then have him check, you know, standing and seated blood pressure, and maybe just that he's got some orthostatic hypotension, or he's got some, you know, low-grade hypotension, might be adrenals if it's hypotension, right?
Okay.
And then, you know, that could be just as aggravated by meals because, you know, it tends to be lowish to begin with. And then when the blood sugar starts to go down right before a meal, then he feels it more acutely. So I'd check the blood pressure, like when he first gets up in the morning, check it, you know, a couple of times and check it right before the meal when he's feeling that and see if it's not lower.
Okay, good. Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Bye. All right, Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn. Whoops. Unmute yourself, Carolyn. Huh. 789-512-789-3168. And she's gone. Huh. I wonder what happened. No, you just put your hand down. Is that you, Carolyn, or who's there? There you are. You put your hand up again. But we're not hearing you. That's weird. Check yourself on mute. I heard something just a minute ago. Maybe call back in.
Oh, here.
Oh, there
you
are.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Mute was selected. I don't know what that was. Yeah, sorry, I didn't realize I was on the wrong call, but I actually am a practitioner, just a different species.
Right.
Anyway,
that's right.
I know what you're talking about. Different species. So actually, my question is, I heard a lecture recently and bought a book from Dr. Gundy, and he has a book out, and Mercola really likes this guy, called The Plant Paradox, and he's talking about lectins, which is a protein in plants designed to protect plants from predators, meaning us, and things that eat plants, and how that damages this tight junction in the digestive tract and helps contribute to leaky gut and dysbiosis and, you know, all that. And he tracks along with a lot of what you say, you know, but some of the stuff doesn't track when it comes to that lectin thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not a fan of chia seeds. He said they have a lot of lectins. He doesn't like cashew nuts. Green beans, he doesn't like any of the squashes. I mean, all the rest of, you know, everything else is tracking. But, you know, I've been eating a lot of chia seed porridge, and if I'm eating something that may be weakening the tight junctions or allowing permeability of the tight junctions of the digestive tract, I don't really want to do that. So
I understand,
you know. My question is, are you familiar with his work? And I mean, he sounded extremely brilliant when I was listening to the lecture. And I noticed when I did your, you know, your sweet spot solution, I felt so much better getting off all grains, no beans. I mean, he hates beans, you know, but
yeah.
He said they're, the beans and the lentils are probably the top culprit in the lectins in terms of the amount that they have. So I'm wondering if part of why I felt so much better was also not only I was eating all those carbs that I didn't realize, you know, but also the lectins. So
mm-hmm.
I didn't know if you were familiar with it or what your thoughts were, but that I guess the chia seed thing and the cashew, those were the two ingredients, were the two three
bother,
things
yeah.
that I eat that I'm like, do I need to
yeah.
stop eating
so
I don't know.
I think that, you know, there's something to it, and there I've heard of I don't know his work per se, but I've heard of work with lectins for a long time, and I think it. You know, again, there's a lot of biochemical individuality, and some people are going to be more sensitive than others. Certain lectins are going to be more damaging than others. And I haven't done extensive research on it, but I think that sometimes we pick a particular food constituent and make a big deal out of it, like oxalates, for example. Like excess oxalates are not good for anybody, but oxalates are in everything.
No.
Right. And you're not going to avoid them mm-hmm. altogether, and you shouldn't avoid them altogether. But some people are super, super sensitive to them due to genetics and due to leaky gut
mm-hmm.
that they have to be super, super careful about oxalates while they're fixing the problem. And I'm kind of leaning towards the lectins because lectins do have some positive effects. You know, I know that some of the lectins, soybeans, for example, are said to be helpful for female reproductive hormones. And so there's positives. And same thing with phytates. There's a big thing, hullabaloo, like stay away from grains because of phytates, stay away from this because of phytates. And again, I think there's very much biochemical individuality between people as to which people are going to be more sensitive. But then phytates have a lot of protective effects as well. Yeah, they're protective for the plant, but they're also protective for us. So I'm guessing that it's similar for lectins, and I'm going to take down his name. Because I want to look at it.
He was very brilliant, very, very brilliant. He was on Mercola's site, and I listened to a lecture, and then I just bought his book. But he was being interviewed, not by Mercola, by someone else. But he's a cardiologist, and he originally had a different track, you know, on nutrition, and then he didn't have such a huge ego that he couldn't change gears, you know. So you know, he realized he didn't have the right thing, so. What he says totally
tracks.
Just
give it a yes. Okay. Well, I want to look at it because I've been doing a lot of this work lately and teachings on what I call the food religions and how people become dogmatic and how we create this reductionistic approach to foods.
He talked about that as well. You know, he was treating John Robbins, who had been on an Ayurvedic diet and. Killed him of all that lentils and rice, and he came to Dr. Gundy to get well. He said, okay, you know, what do I do? And he put him on his diet, which is, again, very, very similar to
yeah, so with the exception of those particular things, the chia and the, yeah.
So,
flax
the
also
cashews,
has
green beans. Well, he didn't mention flax. That wasn't in there. He said that there was a lot of lectins and chia seeds, and I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't feel bad when I eat them.
I don't either. And right. And it doesn't mean it's going to.
I know you're the
queen of chia, right?
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
You know, anything in excess can certainly be damaging, and that's the thing.
Well, sure, yeah. But it was just new information, and there was a few things in there that I'm doing that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That I feel a lot better. And so. Okay, well, that was it. You know, I didn't know if I should be eliminating chia porridge, you know.
Yeah, you know, let me look into it because I don't want to eliminate chia. I mean, I feel like I'm going to eat it.
Yes, Plant Paradox is the name of this new book.
Plant Paradox.
And it's Dr. Gundy. And he's an MD out of, he's in California, Palm Springs, I believe. And he's probably, I'd say, he's easily in his 60s or maybe even early
70s. Okay. Yeah, it's worth looking at.
He was. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because, you
that
know, when
it.
You look
That's
at
all
it, all plants have constituents that could be potentially harmful for certain folks, right? So the oxalates we just mentioned, right. There's salicylates in some, there's histamines in some, there's sulfur that some people react to. There's all sorts of things, FODMAPs. And so there's just more things, phytates, to think about. And if try to eliminate all those things because it could potentially be damaging to some people, then we don't have anything left to eat. So we have to be realistic.
Right.
And what I usually
recommend. And really, most of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, as I say, what I usually recommend is eliminate for a week and then add those things back in and really notice how you feel off and how you feel on. Because they're going to have an effect. They're going to have an effect, and you're going to notice it.
I mean, I feel great. But, you know, and.
Whoops. I just saw, you just fuzzed out.
And foods that are good. And most of this stuff totally tracks with yours. There was just a few things that were different.
Yeah. So. I'll take a look at it. A friend of mine sent me an article about, because I was talking about phytates and how, you know, phytates combined minerals, and he was sending me this article, which I haven't got a chance to read the whole thing yet, but about how good phytates are and how phytates have all these protective effects. And again, I think it's just, you know, a lot of it is personalization, right? We eliminate the known issues, the things that are problematic, right? The particular
laboratory
things, the junk, right? And then we eat real food, and then we, within each person, determine which of those real foods, I call it when good food can be bad for you, right? And you figure out when those good foods are turning against you for whatever reason, biochemical, individuality, genetics, old injuries, et cetera.
And so, he did say something actually about tomatoes. I know they're a nightshade, but that most of the lectins are in the peels and the seeds of plants. And so if you're peeling and de-seeding, you know, tomatoes or cucumbers or, you know, squash, that it's much better for you. And how that when you get tomatoes from Italy, you know, in jars or whatever, they're de-seeded and their skins are gone. The ones coming from Italy. So did they figure that out? We didn't. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I don't know. So. But I think a lot of this is dose dependent. It's not like, you know, if you have an allergy reaction, an allergic immune reaction to something, even a small amount is going to trigger it. Whereas there's dose dependent, like we said, with oxalates. Some people, their threshold is different. It might be so like this. It's like, I don't know that I want to eliminate foods completely. Like for me, spinach. I love spinach, but I don't eat a lot of it. I mix it with other things because if I ate like big boxes of spinach every day, I think I'd get too much oxalates. So, and it would bind my calcium.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, this is a good food and I'm going to eat this much of it. This is a good food and I'm going to eat this much of it and balance it, just like a constant variety and balance. So maybe not eating chia seeds every day, but having them three times a week or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Okay. I'm actually headed up to my attic. I have the Junk Busters here. And now
the Junk Busters. You'll have to tell me about that. That sounds good.
Oh, I am going through my attic. I'm going through my garage. I'm on a roll. And because of you, I have the energy to do all this. It's amazing. Thank you, Rita Marie.
Thank you.
I'm giving you the credit because this takes huge work. I've been in this house 26 years. Do you know how much junk I have?
A lot. I got to hire these. You have to tell me how it goes because I need somebody to come in and help me get rid of my junk.
You know, so I'm actually, I'm actually going through it myself, but they're hauling it off for me.
Ah, okay.
So it's good.
Got it.
Yep.
But, all right. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, Carolyn. You take care.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Who else? Let me look in the chat. We've had just such a wide variety of questions here. Okay, let me see. My thing is repopulating and then I'll go backwards. It looks like some conversations in the chat as well. I see sleep apnea and let me see. I can't get this thing to move. Lordy, lordy. Okay, there we go. Elaine said, should we go back to modules we've completed? Are there new assignments to complete? We'll let you know when there are. We haven't gone back to all of them yet, but we'll let you know. Let's see. Tony said, I agree. I'm getting invited to podcasts and summits and really helping me to showcase myself as an expert. Yep. Yep. And I love seeing you out there, Tony. It's so awesome. Tony said, I listened to Alan Davidson recording. It was so powerful. I thought so too. I love that he just stopped and we did a process right there, a clearing process. Laura, I love the idea of serving other people. Lately, I've been having the challenge of setting healthy boundaries. So we talked about that. Allie, I have an issue with the energy. I've done a joint venture with a lady who has very heavy, powerful energy and swamps me. Her vision for her business always comes as higher priority than mine. She's not learned this leveraged way of working, and she wants an old fella. Allie, I'm learning a lot from Bill Barron. I love Bill Barron. Laura said, Tony says, I've learned from Dr. Rita Marie how to firmly but lovingly invite them to schedule a free consultation with a getting to know you form so that you can really support them in a meaningful way. Yes. Changing lives one person at a time or 100,000 people at a time. Right. It's really cool to be able to write an email and know that you're reaching that many people. You know, and some bunches of them unsubscribe if they don't like it, but that's fine. They're not your audience, right? If I send out a video and I say, hey, I've got all this great information about autoimmunity and people unsubscribe, it means that they're just not there. They're just not part of it. Tony, I love being part of a community of practitioners dedicated to changing lives. Gives me chills. Me too. You know, when I think about having fun, I mentioned this on the call I did earlier today with the, almost done, the Vital community. I did a talk on brain health. By the way, I did it off the top of my head. I wrote like a page of notes like 2 minutes before I went on and just talked, and it went beautifully because it just came from a place of serving. What do I have in my head already that I can give them and serve? But one of the things I said was, you know, we have to have fun, and fun is really helpful for good brain health. And I said, but it's fun is, Lynn said, the perspective of what you're doing is fun. So you just change your perspective. And I said, I stayed up till 5 a.m. last night creating an autoimmune presentation, and it was fun for me. So I lost track of time. Elaine, time block schedule, doing the same with my blogging and coaching. Yes, that's perfect. So you keep your family time sacred. And setting preset questions to answer. That's perfect, right? And you can set up an FAQ or you can actually just send them to that. Send, you know, little snippets to them. Yep. 15 years ago, somebody expected me to leave my family dinner to handle a problem. That was my moment. I used to have people who I'd see that during the day. I'd charge them like anywhere from $100 to $150 for their consultation, and then they'd feel like they owned me, and they'd call me up at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock that night to ask me what brand it was of vitamin C I recommended. So the way I got around that is I changed their expectation. So whenever I signed somebody up for coaching, I would say, okay, and we do packages. You can do 3 sessions, 5 sessions, and you can get the deluxe package that includes email interaction in between calls. Or you can get this one. And they knew right there. They didn't pay for it. They didn't get it. It was a really good way of setting a boundary. Great. Yeah, this call was all over the place, even talking about sleep apnea. Allie says sleep apnea usually linked to obesity, large tongue when you examine the pharynx, and a large neck collar size. So everything, like so many things, are back to the basics. If you drink coffee, tea, or soda, do milk products, you can have a pH imbalance that can encourage the body to rob sodium out of the mucosal lining of the throat, inhibiting its ability to retain proper moisture. There you go. Good job, Lynn. Singing and exercises as well, sure. And then the moisture, you know, drinking and gargling, really helpful. Okay, I'm going to look at that plant paradox. Thank you, Dr. Gundy, popular in Mary Lynn's area, retired from Loma Linda. Okay. I am getting lost forever. So I'm at the end. Boundaries around emails, but the main thing is because the old-fashioned BHRT model involves being seen every 3 months, they have lots of questions between appointments. So you charge them for it. That's the way you do it. You go, okay, we're going to do this program, and you get to see me every 3 months to get your BRT examined, and then you have X number of calls in between to ask me questions, and you charge. You can't just give it away. You really can't just give it away. I've learned it the hard way, guys. All right. I am going to go off to the next call, which is on this same line and just minutes away, so I'm going to open up your lines, and thank you so much for being here.